Hi, everyone, and welcome to this next edition of the Sustainable Connections podcast. If you've been a listener before, you know that the basic principle of our ERM series of conversations is to try and connect people across the sustainability world who are collaborating, partnering, thinking together about the ways that we can collectively work to solve the big planetary challenges that sit in front of us. Today fits that theme just perfectly. Really delighted to be here in Dubai, actually, with Marty McBrien, who's the Chief of Strategic Affairs and Capacity Building at the IFERS Foundation, which we're going to get that explained in a moment, as well as my colleague Rob LeCount, who's our climate lead for our services in North America. So first off, just welcome Marty, welcome Rob. Marty, say hi.
Thank you for having me along. What a great podcast to be part of.
Sustainable Connections brings some interesting folks together, and we're expecting that today is just going to be one that people really love when they get to hear it. Marty, I am going to kick off with you. A couple of things, I guess. I want to know, because where we are, we're in the middle of COP28, almost on the halfway point. What's your experience here so far before we move on to a conversation about more specifically disclosure?
Thank you. And I you know what, I'm feeling pretty optimistic. I'm an optimistic person anyway, but I'm feeling pretty optimistic. We haven't spent the first week negotiating the agenda. We've been started off with action. Well, maybe not quite as much as we all would have liked, but you can see real progress on things that we've been talking about for years, whether that be on the UN negotiation level, the moving of money, you know, the financial commitments, not quite what we need, but we've still got financial commitments coming through. But in the, you know, non-state actor space, which many of us are participating in right now, I think there's been some really good connections and bringing together and activities that are starting to come through after many, many years that I think will really help us get us to that net zero world that we're all, you know, here to push for.
Yeah. Hearing some of the similar things that the loss and damage fund on the very first day, very symbolic amount of money, given how much money is actually needed. But a year ago, having a loss and damage fund and having people put money into it seemed like it may never happen. So symbolic win, perhaps, but a win nonetheless, and things like that to build on. I'm more optimistic than not so far as well, which I know is not what's entirely reflected in the headlines that are swirling around this event. Rob, what about you? Your first days at COP, what are your impressions?
Well, thanks, Mark. It's great to be with you and to be a part of the podcast. You know, when you think about COP, it's a big agenda. There is a lot that's taken on. And one of the worries coming out of a process like this is that we have such a wide variety of initiatives that do we have the clear signals coming out of COP in terms of what we need for action. And one of the things that I'm very excited to see is the Global Decarbonization Accelerator. And there we have some very specific goals that are very achievable. They're stretch goals. They're not easy, but achievable by 2030. And that's talking about tripling renewable generation capacity, to double the improvement in energy efficiency by 2030. And then finally, one of the ones that we've been working very hard on is zeroing out methane emissions and flaring within oil and gas operations. Those are significant opportunities that are available to us, but they are very much available. So seeing that progress on those clear signals, I think, is very exciting.
Yeah, another point that I'm hearing people too, that the whole tripling renewables by 2030, I'm not just hearing people saying we're going to do it. They're saying we should smash this, right? There's no excuse about not smashing it. And listening to CEOs in a room the other day talking about the hundreds of billions of dollars that their companies are putting into their renewables plans. I also, you framed that, Rob, you know, the Global Decarbonization Accelerator. I have to admit, whenever I hear that, I picture a machine that is our Global Decarbonization Accelerator, that we kind of push stuff through one end and outspits the decarbonization. I want it to work in a Willy Wonka-esque kind of way. Marty, we'd be totally remiss if we didn't turn this from COP, which we could talk about all day, I think, to sort of the specifics of disclosure and the role that you play and the organizations that you represent play. So you've got a title that says IFRS Foundation, that's all tied up with ISSB. I'm committing sins of acronym soup. I don't want to assume that all of our listeners know what any of that means. So tell us a bit more about the Chief of Strategic Affairs Capacity Building, IFRS, ISSB world, and what that means.
Thank you very much. So the IFRS Foundation was set up a bit over 25 years ago now to, if you like, harmonize the, let's use a term we use in sustainability, the acronym soup of accounting standards that were all around the world. Everyone had their own approach, and that was to bring harmonization and create a set of accounting standards that could be used and compared globally. Now, we've managed to achieve that in over 145 countries, which is significant, and it's having significant impact. About 4 years ago, IOSCO finished its work with its Sustainable Finance Task Force, having a look at markets and the impact that some of these newer issues like climate were having on financial stability, and decided that something needed to be set up to do the same for climate and other sustainability issues. Now, at that time, we also, and as you'd be very familiar with at ERM, and listeners, I'm sure, we had, you know, a range of voluntary standards that had been building in the market at the time to address some of these issues, you know, innovating around some of these ideas, testing them with companies. And so the IFRS Foundation just said, well, we did this for accounting standards with the support of IOSCO, decided, well, why not try and do this for sustainability standards? But they were told we need to build off what's already in the market. So the IFRS Foundation went out and approached organizations like my old organization, the Climate Disclosure Standards Board, but along with the Sustainability Accounting Standards Board, the Integrated Reporting Movement, and said, hey guys, you're the other standards out there, and TCFD at the time, you're all the other standards out there, or frameworks out there, approaches to investor-focused reporting. Why don't you all come and join us and we'll form the International Sustainability Standards Board? And that was launched during Climate Finance Day 2 years ago at COP26. So now the IFRS Foundation is now the home of the International Accounting Standards Board and the International Sustainability Standards Board. So in part of my remit, the strategic affairs, I look after both those boards and the key relationships for their success. I'm also the foundation CSO. So I have to walk the talk against our standards, which is, you know, remember, I'm bringing this into the world of accounting here too, right? So I've got my own challenges, listeners. I do too, on how you bring this into an organization. But we have our 2030 and 2050 targets. So that's a start. And I'm responsible for building capacity and capability globally for the adoption of the ISSB standards. Now, that also stems from anyone, from a regulator. So think about working with IOSCO. How do we upskill their members to be able to take on this challenge? That also is the chairman of those capital market regulators, but also the staff inside them to actually get comfortable with so they can bring this in and enforce it, if you like, and bring the policies around it. But then right through the, you know, the information supply chain, if you like, thinking about all those professions we now need to upskill globally to get where we need to get to meet the challenges of transition and finance that transition over the next few years and really sort of create those sustainable, resilient markets and that future we need.
All fantastic. So, you know, a couple of decades of consolidation around financial accounting standards, just a few years of consolidation around sustainability standards, only 2 years for ISSB in all of that mix. You ran through so many things, and one of the paths I did hear was consolidation and harmonization. But Rob, I think it's fair to say, as we listen to conversations here at COP and as we listen to what some of our clients and partners are saying, they're overwhelmed by the reporting agenda right now. So is it kind of fair to say that we're harmonizing and proliferating at the same time? Is that a misperception? You know, what does this world look like from where you're sitting?
It is a complicated process as we talk about different initiatives that have been coming together in that harmonization process. You know, Marty talked a lot about the voluntary programs. There's also now the additional layer of putting that into regulatory systems. So we have examples within Europe moving forward with programs. We have in the United States, the SEC that has a proposal out, but waiting for a final adoption. And of course, the major development in the United States is back in October, a couple bills signed in California that are requiring now mandatory disclosure.
Some home state pride there for me.
But when you look at that, there are a variety of deadlines, compliance deadlines, and certainly some differences across all of those. So that is a lot to take in, but it's important. It's driving change right now, and it's important to take that in. But more importantly, when you go underneath all of those, there really is harmonization. The basic structure that we're seeing with ISSB as the global baseline, but then the regulatory developments that are happening, it comes back to some basic principles around the GHG protocol and TCFD as an example. And so those different initiatives may all go a different step for a final requirement, let's say on scope 3 emissions or different aspects of financial analysis, but it's really back to the same basics. So if you're doing best practices around the key elements of disclosure here, you're going to be well positioned on all of these initiatives.
Okay, so I think I hear you both saying that as many things as I can see going on around us in the field, there is a common baseline, a foundation that we're mutually building underpinning this. And if I follow a consistent core, I might be ready for what's happening in all these different jurisdictions. Marty, I want to come back to you on what is happening in all those jurisdictions. So Rob moved on from what you said to some of the things that different governments are doing. And I guess we're borrowing with this phrase from what happened at the Nature COP in Montreal last year with the Make It Mandatory campaign, but in the same way, in terms of pushing to make sustainability reporting mandatory, it's happening. We're getting governments passing regulation, and now it's coming in a flood. So did we get what we wanted and we need to pause, catch our breath, and figure out how to push on? Does it matter that so many different regulatory jurisdictions are pushing out in mostly the same pattern at the same time? How do you interpret that part?
Well, I've been in this game a little while. I think I've been on standard setting, unfortunately, for just, you know, over 15 years now. And so, you know, I lived in the world of voluntary for a very long time. And I think it's quite a, you know, it's great everyone caught up, right? Because we had 15 years of voluntary and we didn't get the data we needed. We also didn't get the action from companies we needed, right? Regulation really only has to kick in when we're not seeing the voluntary bring it into play. So it's unfortunate that they're all moving at the same time, but at the same time, it's a real opportunity. And I think we ourselves have worked very hard with Europe to get that alignment. And, you know, they've come out very early on to say S1 and S2 are embedded within and can be a discoverable subset. And we're working hard on alignment going forward. We've been working with the US, we're working with California, we're working with jurisdictions in the global north and south. You know, I've been really surprised and excited, actually, by how developing and emerging economies have been embracing the ISSB standards. Brazil, straight out, it's all in, we're doing it. Australia's consulting, probably the first year in to come in for S2 in the climate standard. You know, Hong Kong, Singapore, Nigeria, Kenya, Zimbabwe, Zambia, Turkey announced yesterday they're coming on board. The UK is currently, you know, working out its systems. Canada's got its standards board already in place. I can go on. This is real momentum. And this isn't necessarily the regulation, if you like, per se. You know, at some point, this will be different how this comes in every jurisdiction. If you take Kenya, for example, it comes in through the accounting body. It doesn't come in through any form of, you know, overarching legislation that's plugged into a climate target or, you know, anywhere thinking about how this plugs into the bigger commitments. This comes in through the accounting bodies and they see it as a great way to, you know, attract capital and be comparable with those in the global north. That's how they see it. And so it's really interesting watching the different mechanisms that this will come in, because it's not coming in like a traditional we would have seen. You know, we saw the governments must bring mandatory reporting on biodiversity by 2030 in that announcement. We saw it in climate years ago. But it wasn't through the accounting, the existing national standards that is that are bringing in these standards that have already brought in our accounting standards. So it's a great mechanism that I don't think we all thought necessarily was there to bring this in. Maybe a little bit of a Trojan horse, but it's a really interesting way that it is coming in across the world. So it's not one size fits all, but there is a lot going on. But I would agree that there is a common baseline. And to make it very clear to listeners, TCFD has now, if you like, handed over its responsibility to us at the IFRS Foundation. You know, you mandated a TCFD, you should still do TCFD, but we would say you really should be doing S2 now. And we'll be taking that forward. I mean, TCFD even shut down its website for a few days until we said, no, don't do that. We still need all those, you know, people still need all those resources. So it's really important, again, with the WEF IPC metrics, the stakeholder capitalism metrics, you know, we're working now to make sure they're incorporated as well. You know, this really is making sure that there's the least amount of confusion out there we can for investor-focused reporting.
And for those who aren't following the debate as closely as we are, you did S1 and S2 a couple times in there. Help our listeners. What are those?
So there are two standards that were released in June this year. S1 is a sort of a general requirement standard. It sort of gives you the how to report, if you like, on all sustainability issues. And I think that's really, really important because people say, oh, you've only done climate. No, we haven't. We've given you the framework to report all material and sustainability risks and opportunities to capital markets in a way that's connected to your main package of information for financial reporting. And I think that's really important to remember. And we've given you some idea of other sorts of guidance you can use underneath that, whether it be CDSB standards, which we've done other stuff on, or SASB standards or other like GRI or TNFD, if you're doing nature. You know, we say look at other things, but here's the overarching framework to plug it in. And we've built off accounting, you know, IAS 1 and 8 for accountants out there. We've used the same language.
Shout out to the accountants out there.
We haven't rewritten anything. We've used existing principles. What we have done that's interesting, though, for users of this podcast is we've taken the timing of the sustainability report. If you publish a second sustainability report separate, that it must be included with the same package of information at the same time as you report to your investors. So that's a timing alignment issue. That is important that, you know, preparers are aware of, because, it, you know, there are some reliefs in there for the first year, But that is something we're trying to bring in, so you have that one consistent story to the market on performance.
And I think that's a great place to sort of pivot our conversation a bit to the capacity or capability that companies need to do all this. I think it's great news that we're bringing sustainability reporting timing in line with financial reporting. And that's probably one of the burdens that companies feel like they're facing right now. So Rob, I think I'm going to get you to open this up just to talk about, in your engagement with businesses, where are they expressing the biggest kind of capacity challenges or gaps and needs? And then Marty, of course, your title covers this. I'm going to come back to you on how we fill those gaps. But Rob, can you kind of paint the picture of where people are struggling perhaps a bit with this?
Yeah, and I'd like to connect that in terms of the kind of disclosure that we're talking about here with the challenges we see in organizations more broadly about net zero and for decarbonization. And when we think about the kind of programs on climate disclosure, that is not only focused on improving the kind of information for investors. What we see time and time again is that it is helping to upskill broader organizations, bringing more of the organizations involved with the key data to understand greenhouse gas emissions and the impact within an organization, and how to develop effective strategies and how to measure progress and impact of those programs. And so when we think about the climate disclosure implementation, what we're really doing is an upskilling across the organization. And that is helping not just for providing this information into the marketplace, but we have seen so many times in working with clients that that is really helping to up the overall performance of an organization. So it goes hand in hand with exactly the goals of decarbonization. I take it back to our experiences with working with many clients on TCFD when that first came out as a voluntary program. And that was very much a process of, in many cases, for the first time, getting different parts of the organization around the table to start talking about climate in a way that that never happened before. It was always silos before that. And typically, it would start with a discussion about disclosure. And a year or two later, we're talking about a net zero plan because everybody became educated. They've learned more about, you go in thinking, I'm going to learn about the risks, and you end up coming out learning about the opportunities. We see that same process here.
And so we're bringing folks together from across the business. Can you tell us which functions are now represented? If sustainability reporting used to be kind of the remit in a silo of the sustainability team, maybe under a CSO, who else is playing the game now?
There's a role across the organization, but let me just focus in on the CFO office, the financial office, in terms of that integration of financial accounting with now with greenhouse gas and sustainability measures coming in. And that's bringing a rigor to the process that we have, in many cases, clients, you know, have been improving upon over time, but it's now creating another step into that process. But that's so critical in coming back to then again about how do we have effective business strategy and how do we measure impact? And with that lens now from the financial office, the CFO office, we're bringing all the pieces together to effectively develop the right decarbonization strategies.
Okay. So we now have hordes of people inside companies who need a sustainability competence that they haven't had before, and to be able to speak a whole new language. And I guess that goes in two directions. Let's be completely fair, right? The sustainability team needs to learn as much about financial accounting and kind of the rules as the finance team needs to learn about sustainability and how to take on all these new non-financial metrics. Marty, how do we help them, you know, in your role in terms of capacity building? Where do we start? What do they need? What's the first lesson that these teams need to take on board?
Well, the first thing I always say is, regardless of what you trained as or what your role is, you know, if you're an accountant, you have a brilliant skill set already. You know how to apply judgment. You know how to make estimates. You know, things we're not always comfortable with on the sustainability side. You know, they'll be very comfortable making an estimate on Scope 3 emissions for the last 3 months because they're used to doing that for financial information. So I think it's a matter of taking existing skill sets that people have and are trained to have, and how do we enhance those, if you like, to bring in the new information they need, whether it be sustainability staff to understand the language of risk and return, how to best speak to the risk committee, how to know how to navigate these pathways with the CFO and the balance sheet and what the numbers mean. And also for the CFO to, or you know, the wider finance team or the board to start to think about what they need to know and what they need to learn from a sustainability perspective to supplement their existing skill set. So I don't think anyone starting from scratch. I would say anyone coming into these new professions, whether that be legal, accounting, sustainability, risk, wherever you come in along the spectrum, if you like, no one should be graduating from school anymore. without these skill sets built in. And I think we need to do a whole lot to make sure that's done across the board, because we've got a big task between graduates going right up to retirement now to upskill this whole part of the market to be able to embrace this transition, right, and the skills we need for the transition. So there's a big gap there. So at the moment, we're sort of picking off sectors and jurisdictions to really like deep dive into what they need and how we can best get that to them. So for example, we're working with the UN Sustainable Stock Exchange Initiative. How do we train the exchanges and give them the right tools to bring this in? We know if exchanges bring in voluntary reporting, within 3 years, it gives confidence to the regulators to bring it in a mandatory way to continue to help that global baseline. So everyone's doing the same and reporting the same. So how can we work with them? So we develop guidance, the exchanges, we train the exchanges, we give them the confidence to do this and have the conversation. And then we give them the guidance and then we train the preparers. And we did that on TCFD and we trained 26,000. And that was in my old life at CDSB. And so we're going to try and get 30 plus on this, right? How do we get, you know, how do we take that segment and give them enough, I like to say, to make them dangerous, to start getting on with it? We can't make people experts. That's not our job at the IFRS Foundation. You know, we write standards really, but we realize this is quite new, right? We don't have all of that accountancy history behind us. And we only really had, 7,000 companies doing TCFD and perhaps not even that well. Let's be honest, like we're between friends here. We've been quite friends, friends here. And that's probably one or two of the metrics, right? Not necessarily the whole suite. So we do have a long way to go on getting the global baseline and it done well. So it is, you know, seeing, you know, creating the level playing field. So I've developed a knowledge hub we launched earlier this week, which has some great resources on. Thank you, ERM, for helping. And that's really to, again, support Global North, but Global South. How much can I make freely available to the Global South? We'll have e-learning coming in Q1. We're working to develop key resources. And then on the ground, what can we all be doing together to mobilize those right networks? So working with the UK government to put together a funding bid to support those 125,000 accounts in Africa that are chartered that we need to upskill and actually help them also be able to participate in the standard setting process. So these are truly standards set by the world for the world, as opposed to what often the optics are of the Global North setting standards for the South. So, you know, how do we upskill across all fronts? And that I'm just picking one sector and one jurisdiction, you know, one region here, but there's a lot to do. But how do we, so we've got a plan for that. We're building that plan now and then taking that out to get that resourced and next step. So we're trying to be quite as targeted as we can, but also we're working with partners like yourselves. We shouldn't do it all, as I said. And you have great reach and great resources. So how can I leverage ERM where it's needed most to have the biggest impact for us to help secure that really important global baseline?
Now, we're more than delighted and proud and thrilled to be a capacity building partner. And we think this is just so important. You said two things there, Marty, I just want to touch. And then I'm going to probably take us back to COP and think about how we wrap this up, because we've all got so many things to still do today. And the two parts that stood out is when Rob was commenting, we were talking about all the different functions inside the business that need to be upskilled on this conflagration of sustainability and financial reporting. And you reminded us that it's not just in the company, but it's the whole system. You took us to the stock exchanges and we could have gone to a whole bunch of other constituent parts that need to come together and also harmonize on this. And then I'm so glad to hear what you were saying about making this inclusive of and building capacity in the Global South. One of the most interesting, I think, sessions I've attended here at the COP so far, strong representation from Latin America, Africa, parts of the region that we're in, and that sense still of, hey, the ESG ratings, the standards, the guidelines, they don't take us into account adequately. And I think that was the happy balance point. It was not adequately. We can see it changing, and this is part of that. We've got to bring it to folks in ways that work there. And what I heard was a real plea that the equity and development agenda gets baked in better than it sometimes does at the start. Another one of those things we could go a mile on, but I'm going to keep us away from it. I'm going to take us back to the COP. Rob, I'm going to come to you first. I just want to think about the future, and I wonder if you're seeing patterns happening here at the COP that will affect the disclosure space in the next 12, 24 months. Or just what you think is going to happen in the disclosure space this next 12 to 24 months?
Two points on that, Mark. One is, if we look at the deadlines for disclosure that have been put forward, whether it's, you know, what folks are working on in Europe right now for CSRD, or the dates that have been put into the legislation, actually, in California, we're talking about disclosure dates that are 2026, some earlier cases, 2027. So over the next couple of years, I talked earlier about the learnings that we've seen with companies on TCFD. If we think about the amount of companies that are going to go through this process now over the next couple of years, it's really exciting to see that scale up, building capacity across the organizations. Marty talked about that support process, but there's nothing like having a compliance deadline and saying, now's the time. Now's the time to focus. And the benefits that are going to come out of that are going to be, I think, very significant. You tie that to what we're hearing here at COP, which is we have so many new technologies or existing technologies that have improved so much that the opportunity space is growing for us for decarbonization. One of the things, though, the themes that we hear a lot here is still, but the business case. How do I put this into my organization and measure impact? How do I build a solid business case to connect to green financing that's available, but maybe we're just not quite talking the same language yet? How can I make my green case to have that green financing? This is a big key to really connect that, to be able to have companies that have this kind of structured, rigorous data to better understand their operations and to do a much better job, I think, building that business case for decarbonization.
Gotcha. No, it makes perfect sense. And the business case piece is a thread I keep hearing recurring as well. Marty, I know actually that the immediate plan post-COP is collapse, recover, rebuild, and start 2024. But as we think about 2024, 2025, what's coming out of this COP that further shapes the agenda, or what else is going to be what we should anticipate?
I think what we're hearing at this COP in particular is a real focus on the nexus between climate, so our S2 standard, and the just transition, nature, and sort of human capital, social issues. And so I think, I mean, in Q1, you should expect, or even maybe even before Christmas, if the stars shine nicely, you should expect some papers out of the board that really support preparers in thinking about that nexus between those really important issues. Because, you know, the standard setting process has sort of like an official cycle, the IFRS Foundation, the board have to deliberate in public and decide what's coming next after their recent agenda consultation. But they knew this important piece was needed. And you can really see that at COP here now. That's going to be so important. You know, I think there's also going to be a huge amount of support more broadly across the piece on transition plans. We only say, you know, if you've bought them, talk about it, but also climate resilience. But what I'm hearing here is we're really looking for those system change accountability measures from the non-state actors. And I think those that are, you know, this is an official IFRS line, so please do not, don't hold it against me. But I think we're going to see increasing, those that are doing the transition plans and thinking about this will also be able to, you know, use our standards and respond and move forward again in a much more structured way. And I've stopped thinking about this as sustainability strategies. I've started thinking about this as sustainable business, right? How are we going to have a sustainable, we shouldn't be thinking about this as a bolt-on anymore. This has to be integrated across every part of every business and every conversation. But you are starting to hear that, like, more and more as I'm walking around, as people are saying, hey, you know, we've been seeing what you've been doing. It's great. You know, we're all behind you, you know, and I've learned this. And I've learned this about my business, or I've learned this about what we can do differently. And I'm enjoying hearing that, because reporting for reporting's sake is completely pointless. It's, you've really got to think about, and picking up standards, right? It's really about thinking how it's going to help you create value and being more sustainable and resilient in the long run. And, you know, I would, you know, someone said the other day, and I won't quote them here directly, it was a large global investor, and they said, you know, this is the global baseline. So if you're not hitting the baseline, what are you doing? You know, and we really need to be thinking about that, all of us together, and we're creating that global baseline and that data quality. We'll have those opportunities we can get from that to, you know, move to where we need to get to well in advance of 2050.
Yeah, no, and that's the sum of the goal for me too, that one of the folks I've worked with a lot over the last couple of years is David Grayson. Some of the people listening will know him. Also UK-based and kind of esteemed in our field. And he just says, come on, sustainability, baking it into your business, making it part of your business, that is your business's best chance of surviving over the long term. Not really optional, but necessary. It will be, you know, the core of what makes you resilient and successful in the coming decades. I think that's a great place to wrap this episode of Sustainable Connections. Rob, Marty, thank you so much. For all of you listening, if you want to know more, all of the episodes are on ERM.com. You can learn more about ERM and the ERM Sustainability Institute online as well. Marty will make sure that we post some of the things that you mentioned in terms of capacity building, resources, and links when we put up this episode as well. Thank you both so much.
Thank you, Mark.